And now, some of my take on a constitutional scholar. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principles and Policy. And I'm back in the studio today along with our co-host, Chuck Michaelis.
And it's good to be in studio, even though we're in different studios.
Well, that's all right. We're still making the recording happen.
But that's right. Well, by the miracle of Skype.
The one thing is, it's good to be back, Chuck. I've just been very overwhelmed with the responsibilities I've had with various work issues. And when it came time yesterday to tape for the program, I just was absolutely unable to free myself up to do it. So I appreciate you, Charles, being able to not only take the bull by the horns, so to speak, but to really hit on an issue that I think is very interesting. You had talked, for those who weren't listening yesterday or missed yesterday's program, why don't you fill them in a little bit on what you were talking about?
We were talking about an article written by a University of Texas law professor named Sanford Levinson. And the subject was an opinion piece that he'd written in the New York Times called Our Imbecilic Constitution.
Now, this is interesting, Charles, because when you sent this information to me, I recognized Levinson's name because I actually have a couple of books that he's written. One was called Constitutional Faith. And no, folks, it's not saying that God is in the Constitution. It's basically read about how we rely too much on an outmoded document. And another one called Our Undemocratic Constitution, which if that title tells you anything, Charles, it tells you what his worldview really is.
Absolutely. There's no doubt once you read this article, where Sanford Levinson stands on the United States Constitution. And where he stands is, you can also tell by a list of some of the articles he's written. And one of the articles he's written is called Our Broken Constitution.
So it went from being broken just to being imbecilic. I like that.
Yeah, well,
it's improving with age.
And my question is, who broke it? Because it hasn't always been broken.
Well, Chuck, you know how you break something, don't you? There's a couple of ways. You can drop it and have an accident with it, but I don't think we have any accidents with our Constitution. The other way is to try to use it for something it wasn't intended to be used for. And I think
Absolutely. That's
the reason why our Constitution may be quote-unquote broken, is that we've had many, like Professor Levinson, who want to use the form of government that our founders bequeathed to us in order to drive home a progressive socialist, nay Marxist, framework on the United States of America. And the Constitution was never intended for that. And so therefore, for them, it's broken.
One of the things that Levinson is decrying is the fact that it's not more democratic. And in fact, Levinson refers back a couple of times to the Federalist Papers, which indicates that he's actually read them, something that not many can claim, unfortunately, in our country these days.
Yeah.
But it's also clear that he doesn't agree with the parts where people like Madison, Hamilton, and Jay were talking in terms of they were absolutely dead afraid of direct democracy.
Because with direct democracy, Chuck, you get something as what he quoted in his third paragraph in this article, where he basically says that although a majority of Americans since World War II have registered opposition to the Electoral College, and he talks about some more stuff, what he doesn't say is go back out and ask the same group of folks or any group of folks if they understand how the Electoral College works. I would say you're probably going to get large majorities, probably bigger than his majorities in his opinion polls, who have no clue whatsoever of how the Electoral College functions or why it's important. But they're opposed to it. Why? Because opinion leaders, thought leaders, academics like Sanford Levinson and other change agents have been for years, nay decades, beating the drum against the restrictive aristocratic constitution, and we need more direct democracy, and your vote isn't being counted. We've heard this time after time after time, election after election, that your vote doesn't count. Your vote doesn't count. Well, you know what? If it wasn't for the Electoral College, Charles, as I think you and I both said on this program before, your vote really wouldn't count because it would all It would all be up to a small handful of very, very large states like California, New York, and probably Illinois, who would end up taking over and imposing upon us their preference for president.
Well, that's exactly what would happen. In fact, what you would find is that the very thing that he's decrying here, and that is an elite running the country, which was the original argument against the Electoral College, that these aristocrats would hold sway over the Electoral College and pick the president every time. The fact is that the elite on the coasts would run the elections, and those of us here in flyover country would just be sitting here twiddling our thumbs, saying, gee, when will we ever get one of our people elected president? And the answer would be never, because there are four states that can completely dominate the majority vote, and that would be New York, California, Texas, and probably Florida.
Most likely, Illinois would be somewhere up in there, too.
Unfortunately, Levinson's paper is self-contradictory, but he's relying on the fact that most people don't know how the Constitution works.
Absolutely.
In order to spread his propaganda.
Well, you know, Charles, and I know you talked about this yesterday, but when we teach our Institute on the Constitution courses, and folks can go to our webpage at principledpolicy.com to find out when upcoming classes are going to be starting, probably sometime July and after, because we're taking a little bit of break now between here and the end of June, because we got a little thing called camp coming up. CampAmerican.com is where you can find out information about that. But the point is that when we teach our IOTC classes, we teach the three branches of government. But here, Levinson talks about the four branches of government, and he splits the House of Representatives and the Senate into two separate branches. Now, I think that's interesting, since they're all the legislative branch, and they are Congress. And a Congress is comprised of a House of Representatives and a Senate. Under our Constitution, they're not separate branches. It isn't like the Senate has a special kind of mystique that makes it a separate branch of government. It is part of the legislative branch. It has to work within the boundaries of the restrictions, the enumerated powers, and the limitations upon the reach of the legislature, just as the House of Representatives must.
Levinson makes it clear, and we talked about this yesterday, that he hates the idea of proportional representation. And he really hates the idea that the states like Rhode Island and Delaware and Connecticut will have the same number of votes in the Senate as California, Texas, Florida, New York.
Well, you know what I hate about it? I hate the fact that those votes, all 100 of them, are not connected back to their state legislatures, so that there's that other check that the founders built into our Constitution, and that is a check between the national and the state governments.
This is one of those places where Levinson makes the claim. He says in the ending sentence, or the ending paragraph, one need not believe that the Constitution of 1787 should be discarded in quite the same way. To accept that we are long overdue for a serious discussion about its role in creating the depressed and depressing state of American politics. He's basically talking that the Constitution is broken. And again, I ask the question, who broke it? The problem is, he is, in this article, simply not making reasoned pleas for changes to the Constitution. He's throwing out progressive nostrums and ideas, and he just throws them out willy-nilly, hoping they'll stick. He doesn't give any reasoning behind them. He doesn't give you any kind of argument in favor or against, and he doesn't really give you any strong argument against the existing system. He just says it's broken.
Yeah, but one of the things he does do, though, Charles, is he argues against Article 5. And I guess that's the only part of this entire article that I could actually say, you and I agree, but not for the same reason. He's upset because it makes it too tough to change our Constitution. I don't like it because it's too vague and allows people like our state legislators to think that they can control a convention, and therefore they try to keep pushing for one.
This is living proof. Now, he takes a swipe at Mormon theology here, because as far as he points out that Mormons believe that the Constitution is actually a divinely inspired document, which I'd say you and I would reject, because it's got mistakes in it. And Article 5, the vagaries of Article 5, are one of the mistakes. One of the problems that Levinson's got is he's assuming that no one's going to go out and, for instance, read the notes from the Constitutional Convention. And in that, he's probably correct. Now, you and I have done that.
Well, we're nobodies.
Well, that's right. Except we do kind of show up at hearings in state committees and sort of make trouble, because we have read the documents that everybody assumes that we haven't, and we know the arguments. And in fact, I know the reasons why Article 5 is written the way it is. It's because guys like James Madison were absolutely scared to death that the states might be given the upper hand in the amendment process and actually take back the power that was being stolen from them in the Constitution that they used to have under the Articles of Confederation. And that's the bottom line. This is why Levinson is so critical of the Articles of Confederation, because what it did was it left so much power in the hands of the states. Levinson would like to eliminate the states.
Absolutely. I think he would like to do that. It's interesting that he points to the state constitutions, and he points out specifically in the article about Ohio. And we have a review every 20 years of our state constitution. Well, I don't think having a review every 20 years of the federal constitution in order to do amendments would actually be healthy for our republic. Again, we talk about this in class, Chuck, but there is that whole idea of the fact that initiative and referendum that is found mainly in state constitutions for direct participation through the ballot box to make or repeal laws smacks of too much democracy. Now, granted, because it's used as another check against a runaway legislature or a runaway court, then it serves to keep the balance in somewhat more alignment than if it weren't there. So that's the reason why we would put up with initiative and referendum, even though they're democratic in nature. But what he's asking for is for radical democracy, where anybody who has an idea can come in and get everybody to stop, and we'll try to add it into the Constitution or change the Constitution willy-nilly in order to address every little special interest group on the face of the continent's desires to want to have their say.
Let's put it this way for a second. The closer you get to local government, the easier it is to deal with direct democracy. I'm not calling for direct democracy in, for instance, my city of Westerville. No, thank you. I still like representative government. However, it would be easier to deal with here than it would be in Washington, D.C., because you end up with things even worse than they are now, with demonstrations and mobs and people showing up with firebrands and pitchforks and that kind of thing in order to try to force Congress to do things, or attempting to shove through the idea that somebody's going to pop up with an idea and we all vote online on whether we want it or not. Well, as I pointed out yesterday, what Levinson wants is a government that responds to the rising and ebbing tides of public opinion at a moment's notice, when in fact the founders gave us a government that responded slowly to those things for a good reason, to make sure that the hot winds that blow today and blow cold tomorrow, but blow in hot from a different direction, don't make our government change willy-nilly every 5 minutes.
One of the things that I found very interesting, Charles, was his clothes. And I know you probably talked about this a little bit yesterday, but he lets the final cat out of the bag that what he's really asking for in this idea of having more democracy is actually to get rid of the U.S. Constitution. Because he says in that last paragraph, what was truly admirable about the framers was their willingness to critique, indeed junk, the Articles of Confederation. And this is where you've got to parse him a little bit. He says, one need not believe that the Constitution of 1787 should be discarded in quite the same way, to accept that we are long overdue for a serious discussion about its own role in creating the depressed and depressing state of American politics. Well, politics notwithstanding, Charles, our Constitution doesn't create our political problems. Political parties create our political problems. And what he's actually saying is, yes, we should discard the Constitution, but just not exactly the same way as the Articles of Confederation.
What's interesting about that whole political party thing is he's very disparaging at the opening of his article on the separation of powers and checks and balances, a legacy of the founders' mistrust of factions. Well, factions is exactly what we talk about when we talk about political parties.
That's what Madison meant by it. That's what all of the founders, when they used the term faction, they were talking about, as Washington said in his farewell address, that spirit of party that creates so much havoc and is inimical to a republican form of government.
So this thing, Barry, is really, when you read it, it's full of nothing but contradictions, cockamamie schemes, and it really, for someone who's a quote-unquote law scholar, this is a very poorly reasoned, very poorly argued article. It's nothing but a polemic.
Of course not. Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
We're going to put this up on the website, put a link up to it so you can read it yourself, and we would invite your comments on it, because unfortunately we're out of time for this episode of principles and policies. We want to hear your comment on this, and we'd like to know what you think. Now, if you'd like to learn something about the United States Constitution, drop us a line and tell us you want to sign up for one of our Institute on the Constitution classes. We're trying to form new classes right now for later in the summer.
And if anybody is part of like a Tea Party group or a church group or a homeschool group or whatever else it might be, a civic group, and you want us to come in and teach Institute on the Constitution, just contact us. If you'll provide the location and probably at least a dozen students, I think it works best if we have about 12 or more students in the class, we'll come to you. Instead of just them waiting on figuring out where we're going to be, then they can kind of direct us, Chuck.
That's right. Contact us at www.principledpolicy.com and join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.